Welcome to the Legends Among Us podcast, a podcast devoted to the troopers and veterans of 3rd Cavalry Regiment. I am your host, Chaplain Jason Phipps, and it is great to have you with us today. We have two great guests with us this afternoon. We have First Lieutenant Stephen Gay, and we have First Lieutenant Caitlin Nass from Burba Gym, and both of them support our H2F program here within 3rd Cavalry Regiment. If you're not familiar with H2F, that is Holistic Health and Fitness. So welcome both of you to the show. Great to have you.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
I've been looking forward to this interview for quite some time, so we'll just get right after it. I got here last July. When did you get here, Steve?
Yeah, I got here in September. Okay. Last year.
And we didn't really link up for probably a month or two afterwards. So you've been here for less than a year. Mm-hmm. And what existed prior to your arrival?
In terms of like the H2F program?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing. It was just you and Captain Duenas, or was he here before you? Or
yeah, Captain Duenas met 3CR out in Korea, but he's the brigade physical therapist. So he wasn't working toward establishing the H2F program. He was more focused on patient care. They did have a Captain Jake Hacker out in Korea who took some of the fundamental principles of H2F, and he was trying to implement them while we were forward in Korea.
And what, based upon that time, was he able to provide you any degrees of success with regards to what he was implementing in Korea?
Yeah, he was able to run a few, well, I mean, we'll get into it in more detail later, but the H2F extender program, mm-hmm. you can kind of say started with him, with Captain Hacker and Major Dixon.
Okay.
Out in Korea, they started doing a little bit of the exercise science, program design, periodization, education for our junior leaders so that they can more effectively manage a PRT plan.
Good. Well, I appreciate you kind of filling in that blank a little bit. Lieutenant Nass, we talked a little bit earlier. You are a great addition to the team, but you're kind of new to the Army as well. So
very new.
Yeah.
Very new.
Why don't you unpack that a little bit for us?
Sure. So I've been here with this team for, maybe like a week and a half at this point.
Wow.
Fresh out of Bullock and fresh out of my direct commission course. So really have only been in the Army active duty since February.
But you have some prior civilian experience.
Yes, as a dietitian, yes. I've been working as a dietitian for about 3 years now. Mm-hmm. A lot of institutional food service experience, some private practice, contract work, weight management, sports nutrition, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What was the motivation? What was the draw to coming into the Army as a nutritionist?
I am a big believer that if there is a problem that you are complaining about often, you at some point have to do something about it. Just to be completely frank, I got very tired of watching, you know, the guys that I grew up with and who joined the military and got out and just have health issues, substance abuse problems. I got tired of seeing that. Lifestyle, nutrition, this is what I do. Yeah. This is how I can serve. So this seemed like the right thing to do.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a question that I have asked a few people, but how did you end up at 3CR? did you have any say in that at all? Or was this a needs of the Army type of scenario?
I did. This was my top choice, actually. So yes, I was really excited to come here. Yeah.
Yes. Fist pump from Steven over there.
Nice. Absolutely. Yeah. Thrilled.
Okay, that's good. Are you from Texas at all, or is
nope.
this just...
I came to Texas once.
Okay.
Had a great time and, you know, figured this would be a great place to start out.
Yeah. Well, that's great to hear. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that's an encouragement to the audience as well to know that, one, you haven't been in the Army a year, and two, so you're not familiar with, like, necessarily the culture of force comm or combat arms, but you chose to come here and you ended up in 3rd Cavalry Regiment. So that's great. Well, really, I would love for both of you, and I'm not going to necessarily go to one of you over the other. So feel free to just jump in and expound upon what you do specifically over at Burba Gym, which for those of you who are listening, that is like 3CR's gym. That is really our Spark facility that we use for human performance within 3rd Cavalry Regiment, and you all both work over there. Just go ahead and just expound a little bit on what your role is there. I know you've already talked about your roles, but talk about what does the day-to-day look like for you all?
Yeah, I'll get us started. So first off, SPARC stands for Soldier Performance and Readiness Center, and that's effectively what our goal is to do throughout the duty day, is to provide the soldiers with performance and readiness services from 06:30 when they start PT to when they go home for the day. I'm serving right now as the program director and H2F physical therapist for 3CR. So I'm kind of in charge of managing the programs, what type of education offerings we have. If you think about the SPARC, yes, it's a gym, and we have PRT equipment in there, kind of.
Right. It's a work in progress.
It's definitely a work in progress, and we're slowly building it out to be something that can be seen objectively as like a world-class facility. But the primary service we offer is education. And our biggest vehicle for that right now is the H2F Extender course, like I brought up earlier, is where we spend about 40 hours, so a Monday through Friday, full duty week, including a PT session with our strength and conditioning staff, to exercise science classes led by me and some of the strength and conditioning staff. How do you design a program? What are energy systems? How do I train to get stronger, faster, be more durable? Talk about our regular fit population in that regard. And then we also talk about some of our special populations, both on the underperforming side. We have rehab and reconditioning physical readiness training for people who are on profile. We have our Army body composition program to help people get their fitness back in line with Army standards. And then we also have, on the other end of the spectrum, our overachievers, folks who want to go to more difficult schools. They want to do air assault. They want to go to Ranger school. They want to go to an assessment and selection. We offer services for that population as well.
That's great to hear the full spectrum of services that you all provide. Mm-hmm. Caitlin, you're located there as well at Burba.
I am. You can find me in the back in the old racquetball court. It's a great office.
I have wondered, like, I've seen like Captain Duaneus there, and I'm like, where do you guys' office? Because I haven't really explored that whole space, and there's just not a lot of offices there.
So. The strength coaches are in the basement, and Captain Duaneus.
See, I didn't even know there was a basement there.
And Captain Duaneus is still over at Bennett, where because his role is primarily in patient care.
Yeah.
So he sees patients out of Bennett Clinic because we are developing that space to be world class, and we're approximating initial operating capacity out of there in terms of both facilities, equipment and personnel, but our connectivity has been an issue, and it's been more detrimental for him to provide service out of the SPARC than at Bennett. But
yes,
he's out at Triple C. When he gets back, he'll be reestablished in the SPARC with everybody else.
There's an old repurposed racquetball court, and I'm not kidding. It's a great space. It's huge. And
good. I know you've been here for like less than a week, but have you had any troopers come by yet that have wanted to talk to you?
I have. I've had one today. So great timing. Yes. And so that was more of a sort of performance consult, which I'm anticipating that offering will continue to grow. I'm also anticipating, like Steve mentioned, a lot of ABCP consults, general nutrition, even condition specific. So GI issues, those sorts of things. So sure. I'm very excited to get rolling.
I don't want to fixate on the ABCP issue, if you want to call it that, but how do you prepare for that being maybe your primary focus for a period of time?
Mm-hmm. That's what I have experience in lot is that sort of weight loss nutrition focus. I think my main priority is, well, obviously effectiveness. Mm-hmm. So we want to see those numbers continue to go down.
Sure.
We'll have to see sort of once I actually start seeing patients, but just focusing on making things as effective and personal and sustainable as possible. You know, I never want someone to come to me and just hear eat less, move more. It's messaging that's been going out and isn't effective. So. Sure. Making it as personal and effective as possible. Does that answer your question? Is that what you were looking for?
It does.
Okay.
Yeah. And I would agree. It's more than just eating less and exercising more because they could just be eating less junk, mm-hmm. as opposed to like really tackling what are the maybe the mental or emotional factors that are contributing to their eating habits that they've lived with their entire lives. So I imagine there's probably more of a mental shift that needs to take place than just you have to eat differently.
Definitely. So. Yeah. I've described this before, that the role of the dietitian, because really people generally know how to eat, I would say. So the role of the dietitian really is what should be and what is. Yeah. And the dietitian is really meant to bridge that gap.
I have to ask, as a nutritionist, as a dietitian now in the Army, and you drive around posts, you see we got Burger Kings, we got Jack in the Box. I mean, we've just got like garbage in our vending machines. So what are your thoughts on that? And we don't have to go down the rabbit trail with that. I'm just kind of curious what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I'm very curious to learn more about the why of all of that. Honestly, very surprised when I first arrived to see what was available. I think you have to make the healthy choice the convenient choice. Otherwise, the end result is what we have now.
Right.
So yeah, I'm very, very curious to get into a little bit more of the why of all of that.
Sure. Well, I'm excited to see what you might uncover. Yes. All right. So going back a little bit, we talked about your team. It was just you and Captain Duenas. And I know you have several people on the team now, a couple strength and conditioning coaches. How big is the team right now? Just again, for the audience to kind of have an idea.
I think right now we have 8 personnel in total. We have 4 strength and conditioning coaches, including 1 lead strength coach. We have a cognitive performance specialist. We have me, Caitlin, and Sergeant Ramos as well over there, who's helping out mostly with our musculoskeletal sit call. It happens every morning from 07 to 08 at Burba. Is where we do our initial triage and screening for musculoskeletal conditions like pains, aches, sprains, breaks, stuff that doesn't need to go to the emergency room today.
Right.
And we can maybe get some exercise on board. We can have a positive effect on long-term, medium-term, short-term outcomes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Staff coming to 3CR, that was like HQDA decision. We had an RCO who was very much a proponent of H2F and Colonel Barta, and now Colonel Chastain as well, a huge proponent of H2F. Did either of them, but probably more specifically Colonel Barta or the leadership that has just changed out, how did they contribute to bringing in more staff? Did they advocate for that, or was it just funding that came down the pipe from DOD?
Yes, sir. So from a staffing perspective, it's all like Department of the Army level issues. We were expedited by a number of years, and we kind of met with a perfect storm with an administrative change and then some spending alterations. So like right now we're still experiencing the consequences of civilian hiring freezes, but our contracted positions are being filled as the contracting company is able to.
With that being said, how many more people do you all have like on glide path to come to 3CR?
So fully built out, we'll have, just give me a second. It'll be close to 25 or 30 on the team. Yeah, then that's going to be with, you know, civilian and active duty providers like me as a physical therapist, and Lieutenant Nass as a registered dietitian. We'll also have occupational therapy. We'll have technicians for all the domain specialties. And then we'll have a civilian program director who will fill my role as their primary responsibility. We're not getting athletic trainers anymore. That's out the gate. But we will be backfilled with some additional strength coaches to kind of, the way I see it is we're looking more at primary prevention, where we're trying to build those strong, fast, and durable troopers. So we're less susceptible to musculoskeletal injury. And then in the event of an injury, the fitter we are, the more quickly we return to our previous level of function.
Sure.
So strength coaches have a very important role there in helping both educate our troopers on how to conduct an intelligently designed program, and then also in how to optimize movement strategy and really maximize the effect of that training session.
Lieutenant Gay, you obviously have some familiarity with like the Thor 3 program.
Yes, sir.
And having spent some time in the soft community, what are some similarities and perhaps some differences between what you're trying to establish here and what is currently happening versus what you saw when you were more engaged in that community?
Yeah, so I'll start off by saying my exposure to the Thor 3 program while I was in First Special Forces Group was really what provided me with the motivation to go to PT school. And that's why I became a physical therapist. That's why I came to 3CR. It was one of the few opportunities to move directly into an H2F setting out of school. So that construct is very important to me. And I saw the consequence of it, right? When people get hurt, they want to be taken care of. But when you think you're hurt to the degree where you need to go to a clinical environment, it's very different than going to a gym. You know, I'm using air quotes here, but if I walk into a gym and my knee hurts, everything is different. My perspective is different. The setting is different. The environment is different. The people around me are different versus having the same issue and walking into a hospital or walking into a clinical environment where this is where sick people go. A gym is not where sick people go traditionally. That's right. Where you go to become better. And so just that piece fundamentally for me was what drove me to go follow the path I followed. And then that's what I seek to produce here. When I run my HF extender course, I talk about a few things. You know, when you're hurt, the goal is to maximize participation in exercise throughout the rehabilitative process. And then I guess my wave top stated goal for the H2F program here in 3CR is to cultivate a culture of physical excellence. And we haven't really dug into what H2F program is as a program, but it's really built on five domains of readiness. You have physical, mental, nutritional, sleep or recovery, and spiritual. So that's where we get the whole holistic component from it. And as a physical therapist, yeah, sure, I'm biased to the physical domain, and I've been a very physical person my whole life, but I feel like that physicality provides a conduit to fold in the other domains of readiness. I think before we went live, we were talking a little bit about this, but we're not all in the same place, right? We, yes. Everybody has a different starting point. Everybody has a different right now point. And it's not about comparing where you are to where you want to be. It's more about what's the next tool that I can implement to make myself a little bit better. And maybe I've maximized my physical only wrong. Because I can tell you, if you try to run a fasted marathon, like it's not going to go too well. You try not to drink water, it's not going to go too well, right? You start folding in some nutritional considerations in education, you improve your physical performance. Mm-hmm. So I just, for the listeners, like those of you who are in our active duty here in 3CR, you think about that piece that is most you, right? Some people are recovery people, but not doing anything doesn't make everything else more fun, right? Some people are more physical. Some people are more oriented to like what they eat and food. And we look at how we can use that to start the conversation, to fold in those other domains. And then as a team, the human performance team, we seek to produce educational packages to meet that requirement.
So you have people on the team like Lieutenant mm-hmm. Mass now who are able to speak specifically to those domains that they are like the subject matter experts in. As you all kind of elaborate upon the value of maintaining these five domains, do you see some other initiatives coming out of the H2F extender program?
Yes, sir.
What are some of those?
Yeah, Lieutenant Nass and I were talking today about some work with the DFAC and how we can make slow and steady improvements there so that we're both representing the food choices. What were the words you used? Nutrition architecture or something?
Choice architecture.
Okay, yes. Choice architecture was mm-hmm. one, and then what was the other one? Sorry, I'm putting her on the spot. I'm putting her on the spot. But basically, we can sit here and we can force a company to come through and sit down for a class and we can say, this is what you should eat. But if they go
choice architecture. Yes.
So if they go to the PX and all they see are Takis, they're going to choose Takis because those are the choices that they have available to them. If they walk into the DFAC and dessert is front-loaded, they're going to go grab some dessert because I'm hungry and that looks appetizing to me. So how do we layer in the education and the opportunity to result in a better outcome? And that's just like the nutritional perspective. But from talking to all the domain leads, from the physical perspective, we run the spectrum, like I said, from, you know, substandard performance to rehab, all the way up to our 500 AFT folk want to go out and do special crazy things. We have stuff that is beneficial from a physical perspective for all of them, but also working with our cognitive performance specialists, looking at how do we handle stress? You know, how do we, and stress runs the gamut from, yes, I'm in a live fire situation, or I don't like my boss. I don't want to go home. I want to stay at work until like 9 o'clock at night every night because I don't really want to go home. And if everybody's asleep, it's a little easier. Like there's so much to our human experience that can be enhanced through some of these piecemeal education opportunities. I think it's very achievable. And I know that we're not in a place right now where we have a plethora of people who meet those qualification criteria. But I think once people start to see the value of that resource and what they bring to their team, they might have a little bit more motivation to achieve it.
We're not there yet, but we want to get there. And so that kind of raises a question in my mind for either one of you to provide an answer for is what are the barriers specific to 3CR that you feel like are preventing troopers from reaching those goals in a more broad way, be it anecdotal evidence or you're actually tracking empirical data to show that we have an issue that is specific to 3CR that is a barrier?
I've got stuff, but if you have something, you go first.
Okay.
Like observational data could be for you.
In your
sure.
whole, yeah, in your whole week, data, right? Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to keep just harping on this same thing, but it really does strike me that the options that are available to people are really not the best options. I'm talking specifically about, you know, fast food, what you see at Shop-Its and things of that nature. So again, trying to cultivate that choice architecture just a little bit, mm-hmm. a little bit more in our favor. And that's easily actionable stuff. It's as easy as Lieutenant Gay was saying, just putting a salad on the front of the line, yeah. putting the healthier options at the front, making desserts harder to see, just very easy swaps that are completely evidence-based and will produce a good result from that nutritional perspective.
Within 3CR specifically, what I hear anonymously is that there's resistance at a command level or something. Like, hey, it's hard to get me out of here. It's hard to make time for training. And it's, you know, I was talking to, you know, CSM McEnroy the other day, and he's like, if it's too hard to make time for it, it's because it's not a priority. And it's not necessarily like when we think about how many priorities we have, we've got people all over the country right now supporting different efforts. We've got our organic training requirements. We've got our readiness requirements. We've got our annual, everybody's got to get their cyber awareness done.
Right.
We got to do this. We got to do maintenance on our equipment. We got to maintain our facilities. The things to be done stack up pretty quick, especially when you're in a large organization like 3rd Cavalry Regiment. So understanding both at the individual trooper level that this sacrifice, this week I'm going to spend away from my squad or platoon or troop, is going to make me a better asset for that group. I think that's an important thing to understand. We could talk about any architecture of like goal setting, prioritization, but
sure. Because I would ask, at what point does the responsibility fall upon the individual to maintain a degree of readiness?
I think it is completely. H2F is fundamentally a vehicle for cultural change. And within the Army, that means taking us from a strictly collective approach to an individual approach. And at the individual level, we provide education and resources for the individual to be better. Across a formation, we individually get better and better. So does our organization. Yeah. And so it's like a good positive feedback loop.
I completely agree with you, too. The responsibility does fall on the individual. I think from a provider standpoint, what I'm describing is trying to address these problems at not only the individual level, but also, you know, the family level, the community level, the cultural level, like kind of trying to poke holes in all of those to make lasting change, sure, you know, more attainable.
And I look at what we all do, like we are kind of an interdisciplinary team, if you will, mm-hmm, that is trying to focus attention on the trooper for a new soldier coming into the Army. It's very easy for them to become dependent upon those systems or to think that those systems are going to shape their decision-making abilities. I'm available to provide spiritual counsel, to provide marital counseling, but at the end of the day, like you have to decide not to yell at your kids or hit your wife, or mm-hmm, you have to decide how much you're going to actually invest in physical readiness so that when it comes time to displaying lethality on the battlefield, like you actually are ready to do that and you're not going to implode. I was watching your face as, yeah, I was expounding there.
Full disclosure, Chaplain Phipps and I talk pretty regularly about stuff. For me, the spiritual domain of readiness is the most ambiguous and ephemeral. But across all five domains, I think we look at first principles. It's a value system, right? And we have an individual value system, whether we like it or not, our behavior manifests in line with our values. And the Army has a value system that we have elected to participate in an organization with stated values. Mm-hmm. So we have adopted those on an individual level. And now where those values are incongruent is where we have issues. So if I have dignity and respect or discipline and respect, it's not really congruent with selfishness, isn't congruent with selflessness.
Right.
Right. Just looking at like individual, if I'm self-centered, it doesn't fit within the Army paradigm of the values of a soldier. So, and then when we look at being ready to go, being like H2F is fundamentally about readiness. How are we ready to go if we can't take care of ourselves? If we can't take care of our family, we can't set our family up to take care of themselves while we're gone, we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing.
We do have a degree of responsibility, obviously, in preparing troopers to go to combat. That's kind of my philosophy. My end state is like, yes, do I want you to experience new life in the Lord? Yeah, absolutely I do. But what I ultimately want is for you to be confident in your faith when you're about to go off and shoot and kill the enemy. Like, mm-hmm, I don't want you to waver when it comes to your standing in the grand scheme of eternity after you have killed somebody on the, mm-hmm, battlefield. So that's kind of in a nutshell, my philosophy on why I exist and why I continue to provide a spiritual advisement and do ministry with troopers. That's the end state in my mind. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming to some degree, like that is the end state for you all as well, is to ensure that from a nutritional perspective, from a physical perspective, that troopers are able to get in a striker, conduct movement and maneuver and direct action, but they have to be prepared to do that in these different ways.
Yeah, and that can't happen after you start. You're not going to be on the battlefield and be like, oh, I've made peace with God now. It's a tumultuous environment. We're not there to really have fun. We're there to do work, and we're there to bring our people back home and execute, you know, the orders given. And I think that applies across all domains. Like if you're not resolute with your sense of self, you don't know who you are and what you stand for. If you doing more push-ups right before an operation does not make you stronger for that operation.
Yes.
Right? You can't.
Sorry. I think what you're describing is it's not a checklist, mm-hmm, of, oh, I hit my macros, I did my push-ups and this and that. It's more of a way of being.
Mm. Yeah.
And, mm-hmm, I think that's sort of the amorphous like thing, mm-hmm, that H2F really has to offer. It's, right, more of a story. It's a way of being more so than a checklist of.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So getting back specifically into H2F Extender, what has the response been from troopers who have gone through the program? As we talk about what we're trying to provide holistically, mm-hmm, what kind of feedback have you gotten?
Overall, they've had a great time and they've learned a lot. And I get to see it when I, you know, these days I'm in the Spark doing sick call most of the time, but I get to see my HDF extenders out on the floor running their squad or platoon through PRT. I get to hear it. We see it manifest in lower musculoskeletal profiling and increased AFT scores. So it's manifesting the results that it's stated to do.
Yeah.
It's just how optimal is our utilization of those resources? Because sometimes folks don't have the flexibility to set aside a full 40 hours to go through and sit down and do training. But one of the things I'm looking at launching following our next H2F extender course that'll run from 21 to 25 July, we're trying to get an H2F coaches course. It's like extender light. We'll just do strength and conditioning coach-led PT for a couple weeks. But through that, we'll fold in turf talks with domain-specific education. We're going through like some of the common operating language that we teach the H2F extenders through movement strategies and pillars of fitness. We familiarize these coaches with that vernacular and then give them the fundamentals to identify proper execution of specific exercises and how to coach and cue that. Because if you're squatting and 18 things are wrong, and I just tell you, hey, pick your chest up and do this and do, like I tell you 18 things to do, you're not going to be able to do it.
Right.
So how do we use our words efficiently to get the change that we need and limit our exposure to injury risk?
Okay. That's good. Totally different question, but similar to obviously everything that we've talked about. If funding were not an object, what would be the ideal program that you all would cultivate either collectively as a group or just individually? And I would say specifically for 3CR, as you kind of gather more data and you see what the culture is like, you see what the issues are that we need to address.
A few things just off the top of my head in the nutrition space. I think it would be great to have some methods of testing, like a DEXA scan, something like that, I think would be incredible. I like wearables quite a bit. I have an Oura Ring myself, so some sort of wearables for those interested, I think would be great.
Yeah.
I mean, just being real crazy, like some sort of facility for like cooking demos and things like that, I think would be incredible too. So I think one thing why I love nutrition so much, that it's such a tactile thing and there's so many senses that are involved. And so you really drive home a lot of lessons by what we can sense, not just what I tell you in an office visit. So some sort of like cooking class I think would be pretty cool too.
Mm-hmm. And I think there would be some therapeutic value in doing something like that as well for certain individuals.
Yes.
If there was hands-on opportunities for them to kind of do some cooking themselves. So that's a great idea.
Yep. It's a great way to care for yourself is cooking yourself a great meal.
Mm-hmm. From my end of the table, it's more like money is only a limiting factor in terms of access to equipment, but creativity can fill about 95% of those gaps. I mean, anybody who's been over to Burba right now can see that it's not as organized as I want it to be.
Sure.
I can tell you right now that every time I walk through that door, I'm like, I just want to get the bumper plates off the floor. I want to get the racks up. I want it to look like this. I want it to look like you have access to this full space. But the equipment isn't what makes a gym. The equipment isn't what makes a fitness routine. It's an understanding of how to leverage the things that you have to get the results that you want and need within the context of your operational requirements, right? So money would be nice. You know, if money was no object, I want a new building with a freaking built-in, we've got a sauna, which is nice, but we get built-in ice baths and all sorts of crazy stuff. But at the end of the day, I don't think that that's going to hold us back in any way, shape, or form from providing this service. We have like everyone but the techs on the human performance team has an advanced graduate degree. Like you got to think about how much education. We got 25 folks. Let's say four of them do not have a master's degree or higher. You've got over a century of education sitting in there in a specialized format just for you to access and ask questions and learn. So I think that we have the resources available. We just have to learn how to apply them efficiently to get the results that we need.
I always come back to the fact that regardless of what we have or don't have, mm-hmm. it boils down to like intrinsic motivation. Ooh. And I know I've talked about this when I come in and talk about spiritual well-being, but the concept of eudaimonic well-being mm-hmm. and how that applies to our entire lives and this sense of being content, using that as a springboard to be motivated as an individual to take advantage of, again, the century of experience and knowledge that you all possess now is incredible, but you have to seek that out. I know that you all are greatly appreciated by the leadership. Hopefully you don't feel underappreciated or undervalued, because I know in the midst of the transition that has taken place with the leadership, and we have obviously squadron out at Fort Knox for CST, and we have a lot of kinetic activity taking place right now, that it's probably easy at times to feel overlooked by certain leaders at times, but you are doing great things.
I can tell you that across the squadrons and at the regimental level, all of their initial counseling statements and their top three priorities is some reference to holistic health and fitness.
That's great.
So when folks say that they don't feel like they have command support, or they think that there's something over them limiting their ability to go and execute and leverage the resources we have to their needs, mm-hmm. it's not there. Everyone at squadron leadership and above is driving toward optimal use of H2F. And because it's been shown across, like, it's not a new thing, even though it's new to us, it's been around for about a decade now.
Yeah.
From like your initial pilot teams and stuff. It is a well-established program that if you were paying attention to the funding cuts that happened over the past, you know, 6 months, H2F really didn't get touched, because it's demonstrated so much value where yes. it's needed.
Well, Lieutenant Gay, Lieutenant Nash, I really appreciate you all coming on to the show, and we will definitely have to get you all back here, maybe with some more of your team, to talk through some other components of H2F, but again, so grateful to have you all here. Thanks.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for joining us on the Legends Among Us podcast. Please feel free to follow us on your favorite streaming service, leave a review, and we'll look forward to talking to you again next week. We will have with us the 3rd Cavalry Regiment Association President, Lieutenant Colonel retired Jeff Hernandez, will be joining us on our next episode, so please tune in. Have a great week. Aiyah.